This happened on Halloween night in 2019. Me and three of my friends, Dennis, Eddie, and Adam, were out doing what most 14-year-olds would do on Halloween, get as much candy as possible. Afterward, we hung out at the bowling alley and played a few games there. I was the one in the group who stuck out like a sore thumb. Eddie and Adam were dressed in all black, donning skeleton masks, and Dennis was wearing a latex Michael Jackson mask. However, I was wearing a bright red and black Spider-Man costume. This will be important later on, so just keep it in mind. After we bowled a few games, we decided to go to another nearby neighborhood to prank a couple of people we knew. Not anything dangerous, we would just knock on their door and scare them. However, when we approached the first house, this is where things took a turn for the worst. We rang the doorbell and waited for an answer. All of my friends were in the front yard, waiting to jump out. I was crouched below the fence by the pathway that led to the street. A car then pulls up across from me, with its windows down. I noticed two men in the vehicle. One was a skinny guy, and the other was much larger and more intimidating. Not wanting to give off the impression that I was up to no good, I gave them a friendly smile and waved to them before putting my mask on. Moments later, nobody answered the door, and the car was still idling across the road, so we decided to go elsewhere. We made our way further up the street and noticed that the car started moving again, keeping pace with us but maintaining its distance. At this point, Dennis, Eddie, and Adam had caught on to the fact that something was wrong. So we turned into a dark alley that went uphill. There was no lighting, so it was pitch black. About halfway up, we looked behind us to see if we were still being followed. What we saw sent a sharp feeling of dread up my spine. The larger man was marching up the alley. We took off down the alley and made it to the other side and started down the hill and into another neighborhood to avoid the men. This is where I realized that the shoes that I had on were awful. It was basically just a rubber sole with nothing on the inside that would secure my foot in place, so it would slip out of the shoe with every step, making running impossible. We tried everything. I even tried to piggyback off of one of my friends, which proved useless despite me being the skinniest. So I had no choice but to hop my way down the street. Meanwhile, the large man had reached the end of the alley. He crossed the street and waited. Soon, the car came around the corner and pulled up, and he got in. We were just about to turn the corner, when the car came speeding onto the path in front of us, nearly running me over. This is where I decided to stay where I was with my hands raised above my head. The others took off without me. I don't blame them. It was a fight-or-flight situation. I pretty much accepted that I was likely going to be murdered. The large man then got out of the car and started yelling, "Get your fucking friends back here now!" The skinny guy still in the car had already caught up with them. They eventually let us go. It turns out that they thought we were a different group of kids that apparently were throwing eggs at their car. Me and my friends retreated back to the bowling alley and called our parents to come pick us up. That was enough for tonight. We were thoroughly terrified about being hunted down by a couple of creepy-ass guys. While we were waiting for them, we saw that same car pass us again, three more times. And even after me, Dennis, and Adam left, Eddie called us to say that he saw it pass one more time. Something that still bothers me about this whole situation is that I want to know how they could have mistaken us for another group of kids. I was wearing bright red spandex for crying out loud. I doubt whoever they were pursuing that night was wearing something similar. Also, the fact that they circled us after the encounter makes me question what they were really up to. I believe that we all narrowly escaped a gruesome fate on that Halloween night.
This happened on Halloween night a few years back. It was a chilling 60 degrees out that night, but was still nice enough to have the windows cracked while cruising down the road. Me and my girlfriend, who's now my wife, wanted to do something scary to get ourselves in the Halloween spirit. So after doing some research online, we discovered an abandoned Girl Scout camp on the outskirts of town. It was closed down due to a fire that resulted in the death of a young girl back in 1975, and her spirit supposedly can be seen wandering through the forest nearby after midnight. Around 11:30, we packed up and headed out. I knew that homeless people sometimes like to camp in the cement structures to get out of the weather, so I made sure to bring my metal baseball bat. There were 8 of us in total, myself, my girlfriend, and 6 of our friends. We drove 3 separate cars there. On the way there, I noticed a white cargo van parked under a bridge next to a lake, but I didn't think anything of it at the time. We eventually turned down the secluded road that led to the forest trail. We parked, exited our vehicles, and pulled out our flashlights, then headed down the path towards the old ruined building. After 30 to 45 minutes of messing around, pretending to scare each other in the dark, advancing further into the woods, we suddenly heard the crunching of leaves. We all stopped in our tracks and listened. We then heard my girlfriend's car horn sound off in the distance. It occurred to me that I'd left her windows cracked, and someone was now reaching into the car and activating the horn. Well, after the initial shock, we all began sprinting back. Wielding the bat, me and one of my other friends took point and cautiously approached the area where the cars were parked. I saw a shadow duck behind one of the cars. I then told my friend to shine his flashlight towards that spot, and we approached the car but saw nothing. We quickly checked the rest of the area, but nothing was around the vehicles or inside them. We then heard the sound of tires skidding to a halt, and saw the white van blocking the only exit. 2 of my friends sprinted to their car as a man stepped out and approached us. Well, something about him felt off. I noticed that his right hand was buried into his jacket pocket. Do any of you have a lighter? The man asked, his hand never leaving his pocket. Alarm bells were going off in my head as I suddenly felt vulnerable. What good would this bat do if this guy had a gun? We slowly backed away and made our way to the car, quickly locking ourselves inside. Why are you leaving? Why not the cops? The pale moonlight illuminated the man's sickly smile as he stood in between the cars. Now, which one of you fuckers has a light? Just then, my friend started up his car, causing the man to look in his direction. Well, I took this as my cue to fire up my girlfriend's car, and we hauled ass out of there. Well, it turns out there was just enough room for our vehicles to make it past the van. We sped down that country road as fast as we could and made it back to my place in record time. And I have no idea what that man had planned for us, or what he had in his pocket. But it couldn't have been good. If you're going to have an adventure on Halloween night, just remember to be careful and pay close attention to your surroundings, especially when you're doing something potentially dangerous. You may just get more than what you bargained for.
Me and a friend of mine, who I'll call Josh, and a couple of our friends, went to a Halloween party on October 30th of 2018. We all decided to go as characters from the Purge movies. We all had on these smiling LED masks. Josh's was the only mask that had a green light. This will come into play later. There were 5 of us, and we all indulged in alcohol. Josh got so wasted that he couldn't even stand up. It was around 2 o'clock in the morning when we decided to call it quits. Since I had the car, and was the only one out of the group who didn't drink as much as the others, it fell to me to drive everyone else home. I had to walk Josh to his front door, because he fell on his ass as soon as he got out of the car. After he got inside and closed the door, I dropped the rest of my friends off and then went home. It was around 5 a.m. when I woke up to my phone ringing. I looked at my phone to see that it was Josh calling me. I rubbed the sleep from my eyes and answered. Hello?
Hey, I think there's someone in my house.
Josh's voice was extremely hushed and panicked. My heart dropped. He went on to say that he heard footsteps in his living room and got up to see what it was. He then heard someone rush out of the side door. He said he was now hiding behind his bed with the door to his room locked. I couldn't believe my ears. Josh lived in a pretty big house in a safe neighborhood. I never thought anyone would have the balls to break in. You need to call the cops, I told him. That should have been his first call, but remember, he was still heavily intoxicated. He called the police from his house phone, and I stayed on the line with him until they showed up. The cops found footprints on his carpet and his side door wide open. He was so drunk that he must have forgotten to lock it. Of course, there was no sign of the intruder anywhere. The cops then told Josh to lock all of his doors and call back if anything else happened. It was now Halloween. I went over to Josh's house to help him pass out candy to the children. It was around 9 p.m. when the parents started telling their kids to come inside, mostly because it was a school night. We were packing everything up when we heard a tap on the window. The blinds were closed, and we could see a green light coming from the other side. I slowly approached the window and opened the blinds. What I saw terrified me. Standing on the other side was a man brandishing a knife, but most disturbing of all, he was wearing the same LED purge mask that Josh had on the night before. The man let out a horrifying laugh before he started banging on the window like a lunatic. We just stood there in total shock. Eventually, we ran out of the room and grabbed the phone to call 911. We then heard someone screaming from outside. I'm guessing some passersby saw the man at the window and got startled. The man then took off. When the cops got there, the only description that they could give was that he was wearing a green light-up purge mask. As far as I know, the guy was never caught. The moral of the story is that you should make sure your doors are locked at night. Halloween sometimes brings out the crazies.
Strap in, folks, because this one is going to get crazy. During the 90s, my life was very complex. I'm ashamed to admit that I was part of a satanic cult back then. Now, this story isn't about dissecting my former beliefs, or how I went about practicing my former religion. This is more of a cautionary tale about the unforeseen consequences of being a part of a cult. To be perfectly honest, I never really took Satanism seriously. At the time, I was just a confused young woman from a broken home, looking for a sense of belonging in all the wrong places. I was desperate to be a part of something, and I found a group of people with whom I seemed to connect with. If I had to say and do certain things to maintain these new friends, then so be it. That was my mindset back then. And as they say, hindsight is always 20/20. Anyways, it was the fall of 1994 when I met my first long-term boyfriend. His name was Seth. I met him at a mass gathering that took place in Portland, Oregon. We seemed to hit it off straight away. He and I had a lot of mutual friends, and it turned out that Seth only lived one town over from me in Northern California. Everyone seemed to be happy that we found each other. We started seeing each other on a regular basis after the event in Portland. For the first couple of years, Seth and I had a beautiful relationship. I'm not ashamed to say that those were some of the best days of my life. However, As time went on, Seth became more and more devoted to his religion. It consumed him. It got to the point where it began to put a strain on our relationship. To give you a better understanding of the hierarchy of our cult, the entire community was divided into sects. Some of these subgroups practiced Satanism differently from others, but we all had a common anchor. I hope that makes sense. Seth was an apprentice, you could say. His superior had fallen ill, and naturally this meant that Seth had to take on more responsibilities in his absence. I helped him the best I could, but it was around this time that I started to have a major lack of interest in Satanism. I would even go as far to say that I thought the whole thing was ridiculous. But I was so handcuffed to it because I was so in love with Seth. So I kept my indifference to myself. I found myself faced with a very difficult reality. I would never be able to distance myself from this cult without losing Seth. I was forced to watch him become more and more obsessed with the cult as time went on. Halloween was a very special night for us. I would look forward to the holiday every year. Believe it or not, our particular sect did not require any ceremonies or worship on Halloween. We were free to venture and enjoy the spoils of the night, as we used to say. Seth and I would always spend the evening together and act like a normal couple for a change. However, on Halloween of 1999, everything would change. It would be the night that I left Satanism forever, but it came at a cost. Seth told me that he had something special planned for us that night. I was very nervous because I had planned on telling him, in so many words, that I was no longer interested in being a part of the cult and I wanted out, but that I also wanted him to join me so we could start a new life together. But Seth had other plans. We drove out to a secluded peak that overlooked a beach. It was one of those spots where couples would come and look up at the stars. He had taken me there before and would usually bring his guitar. We'd sit together on the beach and sing some old Elvis Presley songs. Seth was actually a very good guitar player and had an amazing singing voice. We got there at 10:30, and as soon as the car was parked, Seth turned off the engine and turned to me.
Rachel, do you love me?
Of course I do, Seth.
If I asked you to be a part of something, would you be?
What are you talking about, Seth?
I finally found a way that we can serve our Lord together for eternity. And I need you to promise me that you will take this journey with me.
Seth grabbed my arm and gripped it tightly.
Promise me, Rachel. Promise me!
I was immediately frightened. I'd never seen Seth act so erratic before. Okay, Seth, I promise. Please let me go. You're hurting me.
Please don't be like all the others. They lack conviction, unwilling to do what is necessary. Our Lord is not one of the light, but through the light, we can join him in darkness.
Seth then struck me hard in the face, causing my head to hit the passenger side window. I blacked out for a short while. When I came to, there was something that almost immediately snapped me out of my daze and set off every alarm bell in my head. The distinct smell of gasoline. As I looked back over to Seth, he was holding a red canister over his head and was dousing himself with gas. I looked down at my lap to see that he had already drenched me in the substance as well. As he set the canister down on the floorboard, he trembled his final words.
You promised me, Rachel. You promised me. I'll see you on the other side, my love.
He then reached into his pocket and pulled out a lighter. What followed next was the most terrifying and intense moment of my life. It was like a scene straight out of a movie. Time itself seemed to slow down as Seth struck the spark wheel of the lighter. However, the lighter did not ignite. I quickly fumbled for the door handle and managed to open the car door. As I fell backward out of the vehicle, the last thing I remember seeing was the horrified look on Seth's face as he struck the lighter again. The instant the lighter ignited, the car was completely engulfed in flames. I scrambled to my feet and ran away from the burning car. I'll never forget Seth's haunting wails as he was burned alive.
Rachel!
have no memory of what happened next. I woke up in a hospital the next morning, surrounded by nurses and police. I'll spare you the details of the police investigation. It went about as you would expect. Satanic panic was still a thing in America back then. And although it died down significantly in 1999, I still got a lot of dirty looks from both the hospital staff and police officers when the word got out that I was part of a satanic cult. Speaking of which, no one from my sect came to see if I was all right. I had already decided to leave the cult at that point, but I couldn't help but to feel left down by my so-called friends. After I was released from the hospital, I returned to the house that Seth and I shared. It was only then that it finally hit me. The love of my life was gone. I spent the next couple of months crying myself to sleep. I was all alone. No one there to help me. Of course, I had to attend several follow-up interviews with detectives who were convinced that I had more to do with the death of my boyfriend than what I was claiming. Fortunately, they had no evidence to support their theory and the case was closed. I eventually reconnected with my mother. In the time that I had been gone, I discovered that my abusive, alcoholic father had died in a car crash in 1997, and my mother had turned her life around. I ended up moving back in with her and restarting my life. For a time, things were okay, all things considered. I was seeing a counselor, got a well-paying job, and was even starting to make new friends. Normal friends. Halloween eventually came back around, and for reasons that should be obvious to everyone listening, I was not in the celebratory mood. My mother had moved houses after my father passed away, and she now lived in a more secluded area that did not have any trick-or-treaters, which I was grateful for. When Halloween night came, I went to bed early because I had to be at work early the next day. To make sure I got a good night's rest, I took a sleeping pill and passed out around 8 o'clock. I woke suddenly after a short time later, covered in a cold sweat. I remembered the room was unnaturally cold. In the glow of my nightlight, I could see my breath evaporate into the air as I exhaled. I looked over to the clock on the nightstand and saw that it was 10:30 p.m. A dreadful, nauseous feeling overcame me, as the events that happened exactly 1 year prior echoed in my mind. After a few moments, I gathered my wits and decided to go to the kitchen and grab a drink of water. When I reached over and turned on the lamp on the nightstand, I was confronted by something that would, yet again, change my life forever. Standing in the corner of my bedroom was a severely burnt man. Melted flesh dangled from his face as his body pulsated from his drawn, gaspy breaths. To this day, I'm still surprised that I didn't scream. Maybe I was in so much shock that I physically couldn't scream. The horrifying apparition glared at me with eyes that had no lids to them. After a few more exaggerated breaths, the thing finally spoke to me.
"You promised me, Rachel. You promised me."
I only managed to stutter a single word before my own fear overcame me, and I fainted. Seth! I wish I could tell you that this story has a happy ending. It's been 21 years since that fateful Halloween night on the peak, and ever since, on every Halloween night, that same burnt man appears to me. Sometimes he's standing in the corner of my bedroom. Sometimes I see him under a streetlight as I drive past. Sometimes I see him in my rearview mirror, sitting in the backseat of my car. I'm still not entirely sure if this burnt man is the restless ghost of Seth or if it's all just in my head. I've seen many therapists over the years, and no matter how many drugs they prescribe me, the burnt man still comes back every year. After 20 years, I've learned how to live with it. I no longer allow it to traumatize me. However, there is still one thing that I've never been able to get used to. Whenever Seth returns, he always says the same thing. And every time I hear it, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
"You promised me, Rachel. You promised me."